From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment, our relationships with, and impacts upon it. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson is away this week, so joining me as guest co-host is Recycle Utah's Executive Director, Carolyn Warrock.
Thanks, Chris. This morning's show is all about fire and ice. West Coast fires are consuming record amounts of land, property, and lives in California, Oregon, and Washington State. While Arctic sea ice is at its near record minimum this week, why is this happening and what might they have in common? Sean Sublett, meteorologist with the research group Climate Central, will talk to us about the wildfires consuming the West Coast.
What short-term weather patterns are creating and fueling these fires, and more importantly, how is the longer-term impacts from climate change influencing the size, intensity, and duration of the Western fire seasons, and, of course, all the associated impacts to environmental and human health. And, Sean, first of all, thanks for jumping in. Sean is a meteorologist with the group Climate Central out of Princeton, New Jersey.
Sure. Glad to help out. How is everything there?
Obviously, we want to talk to you. Oh, my goodness, there's so much things going on with respect to weather. We could spend 15 minutes, 20 minutes just on the Atlantic hurricane season. We did that last week with Jeff Masters, talking about the Atlantic hurricane. But we want to talk to you about Western wildfires up and down the coast of California, Oregon, Washington State. And let's start here. What would you say are the current weather conditions or so that are helping to produce or otherwise fuel these fires? What's going on? Is it high pressure ridges, low pressures? What's happening?
So over the last three or 4 weeks, in the mean here, it's been a very large dominant cell of high pressure in the upper levels of the atmosphere. But we had these dominant areas of high pressure which have made things exceedingly hot. And so when it's hot, things drop out. All right. And then it doesn't take much of a spark to get fires going. And then they're very hard to contain because the fuel for the vegetation had dried out so rapidly. And then about a week or so ago, we had some stronger winds develop. It had that very cold spell on the Front Range. Those are the things that have contributed to such a bad situation this particular year.
Okay. A couple of the fires, these complexes, I think they're a couple in California, were actually caused by thunderstorms and unusual amounts of lightning strikes.
Sure.
All right, you sound a little better. Now, let's go back to talk about these complexes that occurred in Central and Northern California as a function of thunderstorms.
Right. Since there was an unusual amount of lightning, so they started to spark the fires or trigger the fires, okay? So triggering the fires is one thing. That's unusual in and of itself, to be sure. But then you have to think about, well, how fast do they spread and how broadly in the area do they spread? So, you know, there's whatever gets them started and then how fast do they spread once they start? So those are two different things. So certainly unusual to get that much lightning in Central California and near the Bay Area. All right, so that gets them sparked. But then we have to think about how rapidly they spread. And that's because the area had been so dry and so hot that the vegetation had dried out and was effectively kindling for these fires.
So, Sean, is this lightning a normal part of this time of year? Is this abnormal? Mm-hmm. Is the environment normally wet enough that it's able to handle this kind of lightning and not have it be such an issue that it is now? Is that different in this current environment?
Yes, because a lot of Central and Northern California had been in a drought.
Okay.
So that's the big issue there. So, you know, the lightning came from a decaying tropical system from the Pacific. So there really wasn't much rain left out of it, but there was still a lot of lightning.
Oh, I see.
So that's why, well, we had the lightning, but not much rain. out of these out of this system. And that's why we got the fire sparked. The ground was still very dry from drought, and that's what enabled these to spread so rapidly and so far in space as well.
So we were having trouble hearing you initially, too. You were talking about a high-pressure ridge set up. Was that covering California, Oregon, and the state of Washington?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, all of the Intermountain West for a stretch there about 2 to 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it was covering everywhere from the West Coast effectively to, you know, the Colorado and the Plains.
And is that expected to continue?
That's broken. It's broken down a little bit and will break down further in the next few days. So there will probably be some rain getting into the Pacific Northwest to help, but not a lot of rain. It's not look like it's going to be enough to put everything out by any stretch.
Right. Okay. Now, one thing that is impact, obviously the fires impact people's property, lives, the environment, et cetera. But air quality is unbelievable, off the charts, bad. I just want to read a couple things here. This is what I got off of the Purple Air website, the air monitoring company that has air monitors all around the West. The PM2.5 AQI in Portland and Bend right now is averaging in the 400s. Now, bear in mind that if you have an AQI of, say, around 150, that is, quote unquote, a red day. So that's, we have lots of bad air here in Salt Lake City in the winter. And if we get up to 100 or 150, that's a bad day. Visibly, olfactorily, a bad day. They're in the 400s. Above 300 AQI is what's called a maroon color. And that's, that means everyone is impacted. Those that have compromised respiratory systems, those that are healthy are at risk. So Portland and Bend averaging in the 400s. Eugene, Oregon, right now is averaging near 500 AQI. That's like Beijing or Mumbai or New Delhi in the winter. In any case, that's what's going on with it. The air quality out there. We've been very lucky here so far. We're getting smoke and bad air from the West Coast. That's filtered. We also have some fires out in the Uintas. Nothing compared to what's going on in California and Oregon, Washington State. But we're seeing the haze today is more likely coming from the West Coast. So, Sean, are you still there?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. Now I can hear you. Let's turn, we got a few more minutes. Let's turn to the role that climate change and a warming world is playing on fire seasons writ large. Intensity, duration, et cetera.
Right. Well, the short version is because the climate is warming, the soils dry out more easily. All right. So that is going to allow fires that do start to spread farther and more rapidly in the long-term mean. All right. So you can't say the fire is only caused because of climate change, but because we are in a changing climate, it makes us more likely to have these kinds of fires that burn more rapidly and cover more area. And this is not going to be the way it is every year going forward, but we're going to start having more of these years than not as we go forward in the coming decades.
And are most of these fires out west right now, this might be just naive of me not paying close enough attention to these, are most of them started naturally by lightning? You know, you hear about that gender reveal party and these other incidents. Are we getting to the point that most fires are naturally started?
It's kind of a mixture of different causes. Sometimes it's hard to trace the origins. Sometimes it is human caused, whether directly or indirectly. You know, or sometimes, you know, embers travel from one fire to the next. So there's a myriad of causes. All right. But again, the other issue is how rapidly they spread. Climate change isn't going to change the ignition so much of the fires, but it does change how rapidly they spread and the space, the broad area that they're going to cover.
Yeah, so kind of like you said, not every year will be like this year, but we're going to see a year like this more often. So we're going to have to work on preparing and changing our behaviors and our awareness of this.
Right.
If this is going to be something that's more normal for us.
Yeah, I mean, there have always been wildfires in the West. That's part of the ecosystem. But, you know, a combination of more human development and settlement, you know, land management practices and climate change. Let's be fair, all those things matter. Mm-hmm. But in the mean, climate change is a threat multiplier. It makes a bad situation worse.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Talk about the average temperature rise that you're observing in the Mountain West or in the West in general, the U.S. West. It's decade over decade, things are just getting warmer. Can you quantify that?
Yeah, I mean, depending on the state involved, but we've seen temperatures up a few degrees in the mean over the last century, depending on the state. I don't have the number right in front of me, but about 3 or 4 degrees over the last century. And that doesn't seem like a lot, maybe at first, but for every time you get an increase of 1 degree in the average, you're going to have several individual days that are a lot warmer. All right. So as you push the mean or average temperature higher, you're going to suddenly start to have more extreme heat, all right, and much less extreme cold. All right. So that's what we talk about when we're looking at the mean temperature, the average temperature. That really jumps up your levels of extreme heat, cuts back on your levels of extreme cold.
And of course, we know that, you know, our days are getting warmer, but our nights are warmer too. Is one warming more than the other?
Yeah, in general, nights are warming a little more than days.
Yeah.
They are both warming, but in general, the nights are warming more than the days.
Is that the planet is not, or the land, it can't cool off, is not cooling off as
rapidly?
That's
precisely it. There's not as much cooling off at night because we've got the additional warming gases in the atmosphere. So as a result, the night times don't cool off as much as they have in the past.
Okay.
Well, I suppose, which also creates less moisture. You know, if you get a really cool night, you could be kind of frosty in the morning, which adds more moisture to the system.
That's a good point. Is there a relationship between cooler nights and humidity?
Actually, there is, but it's a little counterintuitive. If it's more humid, it's going to be more difficult for the temperature to fall at night.
Oh.
Because once the temperature drops to a certain level, you will start to get fog or frost in the winter.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd need pretty extreme cold nights to actually have this theory be effective, yes? Like for the...
And the whole point being is that as the world warms, there is going to be more moisture in the atmosphere anyway because there's more evaporation off of soils and off of oceans, lakes, rivers. So it takes more energy. We need to remove more energy, if you will, to drop a temperature when it is more humid. So that's why that's going to be a more difficult sell.
All right. We got just a couple minutes. What are your thoughts? I have to get your thoughts on the Atlantic hurricane season, if you're involved with that. I mean, we're on a record pace there. I think we're up to Teddy. If Teddy hasn't formed, Teddy's...
We had Vicky named yesterday.
Oh, I forgot. So we just blew by Teddy?
I mean, Teddy is out in the Atlantic. Vicky's out in the Western Atlantic. So, I mean, excuse me, Eastern Atlantic. So those don't really pose a threat to the continental United States. Sally's the big one right now.
Yeah.
Coming to the Gulf Coast, Alabama, Mississippi, the panhandle of Florida. That's going to be a massive flooding story, way more than structural damage like we saw with Laura. I think the pictures you're going to see in these next 2 to 3 days are going to be phenomenal, phenomenal flooding.
Wow.
Maybe not Harvey-type flooding, but still some very serious, very high-impact flooding.
Right. So not so much a wind event as it is more of a rainfall flooding event. I remember I looked at the conditions of the storm this morning, and it was moving at like 2 miles an hour. And
that's the big point.
Yeah, having lived in South Florida and experienced, you know, small Cat 1s, it's one thing to have a Category 1 storm come through. It's another thing to have it come through at 2 miles an hour. It's insufferable.
Yeah, and that's the one thing we try to caution people. Don't lock in on the category. The category only speaks to the wind.
Right.
If a storm is moving very slowly, it is going to dump phenomenal amounts of rain on you, no matter what the category is.
So you could say a storm could have a lot of rain, but not a lot of wind. And the category measures the wind and not the rainfall.
That's correct. And, okay. And to some extent, the category can help you with the surge, but that also depends on, you know, what's the shape of the coastline.
Right.
You know, if you kind of have this concave coastline and your wind is blowing into the coastline, more water is going to pile up and you'll have a higher storm surge.
Oh, very interesting.
All right, Sean, we got to wrap up. Thanks again
for
jumping in and talking about this issue, wildfires. Sean Sublett, meteorologist with Climate Central. Climate Central is an independent organization of leading scientists and journalists who research and report the science-based facts about our changing climate and the impacts that a warming world is having on us and the environment. Sean, Climate Central's website?
It's climatecentral.org.
Can't be any simpler than that. Sean, thanks again for joining us. I think we'll be back in touch.
All right. Thank you all very much.
All right, Sean.
Bye, Sean. Thanks.